The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Ethos Atlanta Hawks Team Coverage Podcast. Formerly known as Hoopball Hawks, we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm your host, Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia. Have a special guest on the program, a friend of the program. Glenn Willis is back. Glenn, how are you doing this evening?
Well, Brad, we've been planning this for a little while, and I was looking forward to a nice, pleasant conversation about the Hawks. Maybe even a nice conversation about their somewhat surprising win over the Denver Nuggets, and then some news had to kind of make its way into my sphere today. I was at the gym trying to get a workout in, and right about the time Bobby Brown's My Prerogative popped up on my workout playlist.
great song.
It's great for the workout playlist, especially there. For me, like at my age, and I'm getting winded, that song will like put a chip on my shoulder, and I'll start thinking about all the people who said something bad about me over the years, and my energy comes right back, and I can finish this last 15 minutes or whatever. But yeah, I was looking forward to a nice conversation, but I think there's some other news that kind of has jumped up into everyone's kind of attention in the Hawks universe, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it and talking about that. But hopefully we could talk about the other things we had planned to talk about as well.
Yeah, I was hoping just to talk basketball, but just like I told Glenn before we started, The Athletic always has other ideas, and certainly The Athletic dropped a story, and then Shams tweeted it out today. As far as a spat, not an altercation, a spat that occurred on Friday afternoon between Trae Young and Nate McMillan, and I know Nate McMillan haters are elated to hear about this. It's not an NBA season without drama, and certainly there are some drama surrounding this Atlanta Hawks team that I hoped would not surface. There have been rumblings behind the scenes, but apparently on Friday there was an exchange at Friday's shoot-around that led to Trae Young choosing not to attend Friday night's win over the Denver Nuggets at State Farm Arena. He was not in attendance, but he did show support of them via tweets. So he was engaged in watching the game. So he was still plugged in. But according to reports from The Athletic, while Trae was receiving treatment on his right shoulder, sources say Nate asked him whether he would participate in shoot around, receive treatment during the walkthrough, and play in the game against the Nuggets. But Trae Young made it clear that he wanted to focus solely on his treatment while missing shoot around and then deciding later in the day that he would play. Now, apparently that didn't fly with Nate McMillan at all. And basically gave him an ultimatum, deciding if you did not participate in shoot around, you're either going to come off the bench on Friday night or just don't show up to the arena. And Trae Young decided just to not show up to the arena. So now Nate chucked it up today as miscommunication. Trae Young did fully practice today and is planning to return to Monday's game against Oklahoma City. But I'm gonna start with this question. Glenn, is this news or not news?
That's a great question. I think it's not as a significant piece of news as it may seem, because my thought is, and in my knowledge I have of kind of different levels of basketball, but even, you know, being close enough to people that are around this team and around the league and stuff, is that this stuff happens, you know, now and then. This isn't super unusual for a coach to be trying to maybe hold a player accountable, ask him to be more coachable, ask him to be open-minded to doing something differently. And a player, especially a player of Trae's stature, not immediately, you know, loving the idea and maybe not wanting to push back, you know, on the idea. I have no idea if that's what came into play, but that is a common kind of dynamic. When you have elite players, especially that are still on the younger side, trying to kind of figure out what their own leadership style is going to be, trying to figure out what their own, how much voice they're going to have in what happens in the organization, what happens day by day, you know, what kind of collaboration, ideally a player of Trey's stature has a collaborative relationship with the coaching staff. But there are times, I think, you know, I can say this as a coach, where sometimes you just have to stand up and say, I'm the coach, and this is what I need from you, you know. Now, it's easier for me to do that with a 13, 14-year-old, whatever age I might, you know, I might have or what have you. And for anyone, you know, to kind of do that. When you're dealing with a player of Trey's stature, I think you have to be strategic in how you're going to kind of go about trying to get a message like that across, if that's what happened. I don't know that's what's happened, but it seems like the most likely explanation was that Nate was trying to coach Trey in some way. And Trey didn't love the idea that he had. And I want to really emphasize that happens a lot in the league. And now, does it come to a player missing a game because of something that happened very often? You know, we don't hear about that all too often. So from that standpoint, I think the fact that he wasn't present Friday night, to me, that's news. The rest of it is not as newsworthy as it, I think it's kind of coming across right now. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. The fact that he, with the alternatum of coming off the bench or not attending the game altogether, that he chose the latter is news. I'm with you there. And apparently, you know, from the article, they said this is a microcosm of tension that's been occurring throughout the year between Young, McMillan, and the locker room. And apparently the Hawks have had multiple team meetings early this season to resolve various conflicts. And this is similar to what happened before Lloyd Pierce was pushed out of the door. Now, when I look at the story, personally, it sounds like this is something to add fuel to the fire. Now, apparently, Nate McMillan is not on the hot seat, according to this report, as far as when they talk to leadership for the Hawks. But I feel like this is a story to kind of ignite something greater. Ownership has pretty much had faith in Nate McMillan thus far. The most rumblings as far as Nate McMillan on the hot seat have mostly come from fans, because it's something that fans have been pushing for. But this is the first negative story that has been published to try to put a black eye on Nate McMillan. So I will kick it back to you. Is this the beginning of a campaign to kind of push him out the door potentially?
I mean, I would say that things like this have the potential to go down that path. You know, we all try to connect the dots here. And even when we're trying to connect the dots in a more responsible way, we're still assuming some things, you know, and trying to do the best we can to see what comes from connecting the dots. And this has all the indications that there's a power struggle going on. And the reporting suggests that this isn't a new thing, right? And again, that's another common dynamic in the league as well. It's not what you want for your franchise or for your organization. But it's, I mean, it's not uncommon for coaches and star players to butt heads, you know. But for me, I think the point that you made, that, you know, this feels a lot like what happened the last, what, 6 weeks or so of LP's time with the team before he was fired during the All-Star break, if I recall the timing correctly there. And I said cautiously back then that I thought everyone just kind of jumping on LP was not fair. That's not to say that LP wasn't accountable for how the team performed, wasn't accountable for how the team was managed. You know, that comes with the territory of being a head coach in the NBA. But players have to be willing to be held accountable, have to be willing to be coachable, have to be willing to enter a collaborative relationship, and not and to the extent one party can in that situation, not try to avoid it turning into a power struggle and have it turning into a kind of a death grip level power struggle. And so to me, I don't know I look at this team and I try to figure out like who can step in and broker getting this fixed if there is a significant kind of issue in the Nate trade relationship now. Does it seem like there's a person who's the obvious person to do that? That doesn't seem to be in Travis's personality. We don't know much about Landry's role apart from talent evaluation, and now he kind of owns most of the media availability from the front office perspective and things like that. Would a guy like Kyle Korver maybe kind of step in and try to facilitate some fixing of the relationship there? That's a person that they didn't have, for example, when the LP stuff was going down, but if this is not correctable in a pretty short amount of time, it's generally really bad for the organization, and it just festers until someone wins out. And I think the other thing to note here is that if you read what Shams shared, when something like that breaks, you can almost always tell which side of the argument, which side of the conflict is trying to get a narrative out there. And what Shams reported makes Nate look really bad.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine it came from the team. I can't imagine it came from Nate. It reads like something, I don't want to say Trey did it, but maybe someone close to Trey or in Trey's circle kind of helped get this pushed out there. And if it's true that Nate said, come off the bench or don't show up, I mean, that's, in my mind, that's a terrible approach, Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know how many other techniques Nate may have tried to kind of get Trey to be accountable if that's the issue. And we don't know what that the issue is, but that is, I'll say that that's commonly an issue and a struggle, especially at the NBA level, with a veteran coach who's been around the league a long time and was a really good player and a franchise player like Trey. And the organization has to be careful because, a player at Trey's level, Hawks fans have been waiting for that since the Dominique era ended. They haven't had anybody at this level. And so it's tricky in that sense.
It is very tricky, and I'm with you. It does. I mean, it's eerily similar to the articles that came out trying to point fingers at Lloyd Pierce that were in favor of Trey Young's side of the things and the conflict as far as in the film session between John Collins and Trey Young that favored more so Trey Young in this article as well. When there's smoke, there's fire. I really think that this was something from his camp, and it is noted that The Athletic has reported all three of those stories. So
right.
Someone in Trey Young's camp has a really good relationship with The Athletic and uses it to kind of maintain that power structure as far as star power is concerned with this Atlanta Hawks team. And that is not healthy or conducive for winning basketball in cultivating a good culture and workplace environment. And I'm with you there as far as Trey still learning how to be a leader, using his voice, communicating. And I know communication is something that Trey Young seems to struggle with, but he continues to try to work on, mm-hmm. which brings me to my next point, which is why I personally think, after what I saw Friday night, and I'm going to get your thoughts here on Friday night here shortly, but I'm going to start off with this point. I said it last episode. I think DeJounte Murray is the leader that this Hawks team needs, just purely with how he led the team, getting everybody involved, being intentional with getting people involved in different points of the game. He has a real good control over the flow of a game and understanding when to get certain players involved and when to move the ball and then when to take it in his own hands. DeJounte Murray is really good at doing that. And that's something that Trey Young does good at, but there's times where he regresses. And I'm not going to say it's a lack of trust in his teammates, but or maybe he just puts too much on his shoulders. And even Murray talked about in a post-game interview, which I'm hoping you did get to catch that at the end of the game, just the things that he was saying that was leadership-esque as far as enabling his teammates, saying that if you don't have trust in your guys, you're not going to go anywhere as a team. And pretty much, speaking value into the hard work that the role players and the young players in the G League and this organization have been putting in. He noticing that in him basically trusting that they're going to rise to the occasion when you have three starters out. So I am on the boat that I think Trey, I'm not saying Trey needs to take a back seat to Murray as far as on the court and production and being the scorer, but as far as the leader to really rally the troops and bring everybody together, I think DeJounte Murray is more built for that. And I think that will be his true impact on this team this year and could bridge the gap. So I'm curious to see your thoughts as far as seeing Murray in that role and anything else that you saw from that Friday night performance, a very impressive Friday night performance over the Denver Nuggets and that upset win.
Yeah, I mean, watching the team play on Friday was, for whatever reason, a different experience. They were more connected. They seemed more invested in one another. Communication was better. I think most importantly, the energy of the team just looked much better than it has in a few weeks, I think. And that means something. I don't think we have to figure out exactly what it means, especially, you know, those of us that are kind of watching from a little bit of a distance and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of DeJounte being, the primary leader, if I could use that phrase, I think that's fine. And I think that makes sense to me. I know I will say this, that ideally there's multiple sources of leadership within the team. Correct. And such. So, and it doesn't surprise me that DeJounte, having come from the Spurs have an organizational culture that's been in place for the better part of three decades, you know, and a lot of stability and Tim Duncan, you know, made his imprint on that organization. You talk about a guy who did not care about numbers, did not care about awards, and that's not to say we should hold every star player to the level of Tim Duncan. A part of that is personality, you know, and such. But it doesn't surprise me that DeJounte kind of coming from the Spurs, and that's not me looking down on the Hawks. This Hawks franchise and organization is only, what, like 6 or 7 years into this iteration, whatever time you want to say that started. You know, maybe was it when Bud left and, Tony hired Travis and Travis hired El, you know, or what, you know. And so you can't measure an organization that is only, say, 6 or 7 years kind of into its current iteration against one that's been, you know, having success for the better part of three decades. But it wouldn't surprise me if DeJounte brought some good, positive things from him from his time with the Spurs. DeJounte's also a couple years, further into the league than Trey. I think that matters. And even if you go back and kind of look at the DeJounte's exit with the Spurs and you go read the people that were close to that, it looked like it was a constructive kind of communication between the Spurs and DeJounte to say, look, you know, what do we think is best for the organization, for you? How do we help each other kind of take the right step, you know? And by all accounts, it came to a point where DeJounte and, you know, leadership, Pop, you know, and others with the Spurs kind of agreed, like, hey, this makes sense for all of us, you know, which is a completely different vibe and a completely different kind of dynamic around, based upon what we hear, you know. I want to be clear about that. What we hear is kind of going on with the Hawks right now. But it wouldn't surprise me if DeJounte has a little bit more kind of natural leadership readiness than Trey does. I think all of us have seen Trey grow as a communicator, kind of grow as a leader, yes, you know, over the years. But I still think he still has the ways to go. My view is DeJounte could help him with that, I think, if Trey's open to that. And ideally, say a year down the road or whatever point in time down the road, you're getting good, helpful, constructive leadership from both of those guys. And there's a natural way that the kind of leadership sharing happens. But I think we're a quarter way through this season, this first season, and I think to expect that to have been achieved by now is not realistic. Cool. So I want to give it more time, but I am kind of going back. I am concerned about whether the Trey Nate relationship is repairable or not. You know, we don't know that, but it might be on a really bad path, or it could be a thing that someone steps in to help get that fixed. But I think DeJounte has been phenomenal. Now, the one thing I will point out is that DeJounte in that Houston game was pretty immature.
Yeah, he
and,
was. Yes.
And, you know, so it's, and it's like, it reminds me, like, as a parent, you know, I have a grown daughter now, and it's like, if you talk to other parents, you'll hear parents say, like, you know, my kid is a good kid, but man, when they're around this one other kid, they turn into this different kid, and they're more likely to get into trouble. They're more likely to do things I wouldn't otherwise do, and things like that. And it's like, you know, it felt like Trey and DeJounte in that Houston game were kind of egging each other on with kind of the disrespectful stuff that they did, and kind of turning their focus towards punking the Rockets as opposed to managing the game, you know, all the way through to a win and things like that. And so it's one of those things. It's like, okay, you know, if this is going to be the two-headed monster here for the Hawks, that they've got to find a way to help hold each other accountable and keep each other grounded and keep each other focused on what the goal is. Because that definitely didn't happen in that Houston game. So, you know, and hopefully DeJounte looks at that and goes, yeah, I contributed to what went wrong there, you know. And if hopefully Trey's able to do that too. I don't know if he is or not. But I know in the Spurs organization, they talk very directly about things that went wrong and, you know, who contributed to what and all that sort of stuff. So that goes back to, I think, it doesn't surprise me that DeJounte has a little bit more leadership readiness, is the term I would use. And, you know, Trey's young. I want to give him the opportunity to continue growing as a leader and things like that. But it wouldn't surprise me if DeJounte is further along in his development as leader.
Yeah, and it's like DeJounte was in college and, is in college now. He was in high school. You know, you have your father figure in Pop. You have structure. You're in a really good program that really developed you very well. And now you want to go out on your own and you make a leap and you go to Atlanta. And it's like you're in college. You're with your buddy and Trae Young, some new guys. You're away from dad, which is Coach Popovich in this analogy, and you're kind of testing the waters as far as I can do a little bit more. I know my high school coach didn't like showboating or celebrating, but now this new coach may have some leeway. It's just like when you're under a new supervisor, kids and people naturally test their boundaries to see what they can and can't do. So I'm with you. It is a learning process, and I continue to use this example in J.J. Redick's interview with Steph Curry just a few weeks ago. Steph Curry said when Kevin Durant came on that team, it didn't really click for them until the Christmas game, until after the Christmas Day game. And we need to be, like Glenn stated, we need to be a little bit more patient as far as this working itself out. I mean, the Cavaliers seem like they have an extended honeymoon phase with Mitchell and Garland because things are going well. They're third in the East. It's just seemingly a fit. And it's not like it hasn't worked between Trae Young and DeJounte Murray to start the year. It's just there are some more bumps in the road for the Hawks. And I'll give the Cavaliers credit. They're slightly better constructed as far as their roster is at this time, which we're still figuring some things out in Atlanta. So a little bit more solid and firm ground in Cleveland right now. But certainly, like Glenn says, this is a process. Both guys are maturing and growing and learning this environment with each other and this team. And it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. But now for those younger guys, they're kind of being thrusted into the fire due to injuries that have occurred. So we're going to talk a little bit about some injuries and then some players who've stepped up and will need to step up in the next week or two while these starters are out. But first, this quick plug. Okay, listeners, it's time to talk a little fantasy hoops. Now, I don't know about you. I'm in several fantasy leagues, and every fantasy league that you are in, you have a rival. Pokemon, Ash Ketchum had Gary. And I know you have your Gary out there.
So it's time to beat Gary and get the insight that you need to take your stuff to the next level and win a fantasy basketball championship. Do you remember who led you to Tyrese Haliburton, DeJounte Murray, Terry Rozier, and Mikal Bridges before any other rank list? I know which one. It's the Brewskis 150. And you probably turn those huge wins into some cash or a fantasy basketball championship. This year, the Brewski 150 is on sale for a limited time. And Ethos 360 subscribers can get access in less than a week. Head to sportsethos.com and click on the premium tab to grab membership information or the draft guide today. And yes, to answer your most important question, the Brewski 150 is included in both options. Check back daily for more new features and go dominate your leagues, beat Gary with the help of Sports Ethos.
All right, we are back on Sports Ethos Atlanta Hawks, Gunner's Hole Podcast, not mentioning the Georgia Bulldogs. It's a sore subject for me. So we gotta get to talk Atlanta Hawks basketball with a friend of the program, Glenn Willis. And Glenn, as we stated before the break, we're going to talk about the injuries. And everyone knows Collins is going to be out for about 2 weeks at least, and Hunter is going to be out at least 1 week. Which one is a bigger loss for this Hawks team, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one. I'll come back and answer the question, but in a sense, it almost depends game to game what the opponent, you know, is and what the matchup brings and things like that. For me, I say it's JC, only because behind he and Jalen, there's really there's nothing that was planned, you know, to kind of be, say, the third power forward. I know in his career, Justin Holiday has played at that position some, but it's been in small, intentionally small lineups. Justin struggles with the physicality of the bigger forwards, we'll say, in the league and such. And I know Jarrett Culver played some of his time at the four the other night in the game versus Denver and did okay. But, I mean, there were moments where Aaron Gordon pushed him around. I mean, Aaron Gordon pushes a lot of people around, so I'm not going to necessarily judge him that way. But at the same time, Hunter has some size at the three defensively and has been very good this year, helping with, especially with defensive help at the rim on the interior at the restricted area and things like that. So he's just really taken a big step in that area. But I mean, because of the presence of AJ and because Bogey's back, I think that makes it clear to me that JC's absence is harder to deal with than the Hunter absence. I think Hunter is incredibly important to this team. I think Hawks fans are too casual to kind of write him off sometimes. I understand the frustration that they voice and the criticism that they have about what he can and can't do sometimes. I think it's exaggerated in a lot of cases, but I think there's a lot of natural depth that is available at the three that doesn't exist at the four. Frank can't play there. Okongwu's not been prepared to play there. And so really it's Jalen and then pushing guys from up, you know, from the three to the four. And that to me makes JC's absence harder to deal with.
And I agree with you there. Now I was going to say, on Friday night, we saw Jalen Johnson do some John Collins-esque things as far as rebounding, defending. He has an element where he can pass the ball and create for others, which is very underrated, especially in his stage of his career. His ability to space the floor offensively and obviously rebound the ball at a high clip and get some, you know, highlight reel putbacks. So really John Collins-esque. Who needs to step up more, or who are you interested in seeing step up more as far as whether it's AJ Griffin, where it's Jarrett Culver, who has been a pleasant surprise the last few games? Is it Jalen Johnson? I'm not going to put the expectations on Bogey because obviously he needs to get his legs underneath him and take it game by game. But as far as the people who have been playing, who are you most interested in watching as we have some opportunities for these guys to go on the court and show some skill and, you know, play extended minutes.
Yeah, I love the way you put that, because it really is an opportunity. It's not just a problem. It's not just a negative thing that the team has to deal with. It's an opportunity for someone to kind of step in and do more. It's so an opportunity for someone else to step in and show more. And from that standpoint, I'm most eager to see what Jalen can do with this opportunity. Because I think he's still a little bit more of a mystery than AJ. AJ has shown so much this year already that I feel like we kind of know he's going to contribute good things when he's out there. From Jalen's standpoint, I mean, playing at the four is harder than playing at the three. You could have a game where you're going up against a second big that's on the four. You go up against a game that's where the team's playing basically four guards, and it's a real moving target for guys to play at the four. But I'd love to see him play while Jason's out 32 minutes a game. Love to see him start. I'd love to see him close games. If he can show that he is playing with a sense of stability and consistency to kind of give those lineups what they need, I think that would be great for the team to have that available. And people ask me about JC spending time at the five. And in my mind, from a defensive standpoint, like in the preseason, Jalen played, a good chunk of his minutes at the five defensively. And it was against a team that was playing some five out and things like that. You wouldn't want to like play Jalen in drop coverage and have him do the same things you asked Clint to do. But against a team, for example, like Denver, it wouldn't be crazy to have Jalen either on AG or, in some moments against, I wouldn't say Jokic, because Jokic is just so exceptionally skilled, he'd probably get a foul on every other possession from Jalen right now. But guys that tend to kind of play out on the perimeter, if they're going to swing a third, like either JC or Jalen to the five when they want to play small, where I am right now is I'd rather see Jalen, at least defensively, kind of swing over in that direction when the matchup suits that and stuff. And I think it would unlock an ability for the Hawks to put some, switchable small lineups on the court as they continue to kind of work in their roster. So super intrigued by Jalen, rooting for him in a big way. I love what he showed against Denver the other night. We thought he had a huge impact on the game. And I know it's hard for a second year player that barely played in his first year. It's hard for that kind of player to deliver consistency, and I don't think we should necessarily expect it. I think it would be unfair to expect him to be that good and that impactful every single game, just by the standpoint of how much experience he does and doesn't have at this point in time. But seeing improvement, seeing incrementally more consistency, would be just absolutely wonderful for the team, and I would enjoy seeing that if he could make that happen.
I would too, and someone else that would enjoy that is DeJounte Murray, who post game, when asked about, he mentioned Jalen Johnson by name, just saying how he's just trying to just keep him encouraged to stay, stay the course through the ups and downs. Your minutes are fluctuating, your touches are fluctuating, and just challenge him to just do things to keep you on the court outside of shots. If you're not making shots, it's getting rebounds, it's defense, it's decision-making. You can do other things to keep yourself on the court, and that's what DeJounte Murray said, that he's been really talking with Jalen Johnson with, because he sees the talent. He sees him working hard and doing the right things. He just wants him to do the right things to stay on the court. So I'm excited that he'll get these minutes, some opportunity to grow, some trial and error, but just continue to grow in confidence. And with DeJounte Murray, especially if he plays – some more point guard, more PG1 than Trae Young, which is another question I may ask a little bit later. I know that he'll seek out Jalen Johnson to try to get him in the flow of games and get him feeling comfortable. So I'm excited to see what we can get from him. AJ Griffin, you already mentioned. I think with Collins and Hunter out, I think at worst, AJ Griffin needs to be the fourth leading scorer on his team. I say the third leading scorer if it's balanced scoring from the team, like they had on Friday night, seven players in double digits. But I think AJ should be the third option at this point as far as scoring, as Bogey is starting to, come back and get his legs underneath him and play minutes and so forth and conditioning. Do you think AJ Griffin's ready for that, or he's going to have to get ready because we don't have a choice?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, Hunter's playing in playing well enough, consistent enough that AJ doesn't have to be that. I think it's great if AJ can contribute at that level, and he's exceeded my expectations already this year. I'm surprised that.
Yeah,
I mean, defensively as a team defender, he's been really, really good. And I mean, the scheme stuff is typically what young guys struggle with. And this goes back to probably having something to do with the fact that his father is one of the most prominent assistant coaches in the league, right? His on-ball defense is still pretty rough, you know, and so if he gets caught in space, but then there too, I was in the last, say, 4 or 5 games, I've seen him with a little better footwork and a little more proactivity and a little bit more readiness to kind of take on a guy who's caught him in space than, say, the first 10 games of the season. So even there, like, where I have to be honest and say, you know, both Jalen and AJ, for the most part, across this whole season, guys are just dribbling right past both of those guys. And it's not a surprise. That's a common, area for young defenders just to be kind of the last thing to come along is, how do I deal with being caught completely in space with no help really close by and things like that? But at the same time, I can go look at 3 or 4 possessions in the last few games where AJ was better, you know, in that. So it's like, wow, he's even improving. That's something I wouldn't normally expect to really see much significant improvement there until year two. But his improvement, like in the really nuanced areas of the game, it just blows me away how he's doing that. And on offense, I mean, it's not just his catch and shoot. I mean, his ability to, like, execute a second side pick and roll at the elbow or at the nail and to read that play and make the right decision and to see what space is created by even, you know, I put a possession out where he hit that 3 from the top of the key against Denver where DeAndre Jordan and I want to say it was Bruce Brown were kind of navigating a kind of impromptu pick and roll that he was running there after he lifted from the weak side. And they had, it's literally like probably a half a second of miscommunication. DeAndre was showing onto AJ and then recovering back and Brown didn't realize that DeAndre was just showing. And it gave him literally like a half second and he got to a single dribble step back and knocked down the 3. I mean, the kid's like, I looked yesterday he was 19 years, 100 days old. So say he's 19 years, 100. He's not even, you know, he's coming up on being 19 and a half. And it is just crazy how effectively he reads those situations on the fly, reads what space he gets from whatever decision the defensive unit makes. And I mean, I know it's not perfect. It can't be perfect. No one's perfect. But sometimes it feels like it's perfect because of how exceptional it is for a guy that young. And I know the fans are wanting to be like, he's better than Hunter, you know. And I'm like, we don't have to turn everything into a competition between two guys on the roster. It doesn't have to become DeJounte versus Trey. It doesn't have to become whoever versus whoever. The Hawks need Hunter to be the best Hunter he could be and the AJ being the best AJ he could be, you know, in order for them to maximize what they accomplished this year. But he definitely has some things that Hunter is never going to have, you know. Now, Hunter brings a ton on defense. I mean, a ton on defense that AJ probably never brings, you know, in my mind. In that Knicks series 2 years ago, he got switched into playing center on some defensive possessions against a really big Knicks front court and did awesome in that game. That's something AJ's never going to do. So DeAndre has some real valuable defensive versatility. But AJ, I mean, Hawks got a steal at 16. I'm not going to be surprised if AJ makes an all-star team one day. You know, that's how exceptional I think what he's doing at this age is I think if you ask me, like, hey, Glenn, 5 years from now, the Hawks have had, a second guy besides Trey and, say, besides DeJounte make the all-star team, who's most likely that person? I would say it's AJ, you know. And And I feel like that's the trajectory he's on. Now, hopefully, Nate and the coaching staff can kind of keep him moving in the right direction. Hopefully, DeJounte and Trey can help him, you know, continue to see what it's like to kind of play in that supporting offensive role. And but at the same time, hopefully they don't limit it to that. And when there's an opportunity to kind of swing some more usage his way, when their matchup is there, when he's having a good night, when he's feeling it or whatever, that they start, you know, in a responsible and reasonable way, moving more opportunities his way. He's phenomenal. He's just phenomenal. And, you know, I think he makes a big difference in terms of what I expect from this team in the next 2 to 3 years. That if they didn't have him, if they had some other players, say that was like Jalen last year, where he didn't have the trust of the coaching staff to play right now, didn't have a real way to contribute as a rotation player right now, this team would not be in the same place they are right now.
I 100% agree with you. I've just been impressed with AJ's IQ, as you mentioned, as far as reading plays. And we saw it on film in college, but he can be physical in mid-range to create enough space to get his shot off. And he's just very smart at picking and choosing his moments within the flow of the offense, which I like. So I just love the fact that, you know, they can count on him to make a shot or get a tough shot in the mid-range and just always make the right play while having the luxury of DeAndre Hunter, who obviously is hurt right now, but also a Jalen Johnson, who is athletically just gifted and has the intangibles and tools to be a really good defender, but also rim run and do a bunch of different things and catch and shoot as well. So the Hawks are in a good position as far as their young talent is concerned. We just haven't seen it because of the rotations and that Nate uses in his philosophy. Now we've seen him break from his philosophy a little bit more this year because Jalen Johnson and AJ Griffin have earned his trust, and others have just been thrusted into these roles because obviously of the current situation as far as injuries are concerned. But I was going to ask you this question, Glenn. It's probably a dumb one. Will this force Nate to potentially deepen his rotation? I know the answer is no. I know the answer is no. But as far as just this opportunity, just to see what the Hawks truly have, because I've been impressed with Jared Culver. I really have. I've seen him play just better team basketball than he did in Minnesota. And I think he had a short stint, I want to say, in Memphis last year, I want to say. But certainly I've been impressed with the young talent in as far as them just getting this opportunity. So does he deepen the rotation, or does he just see, hey, for certain situations we have something at the back end of our bench?
Well, so I think Culver maybe becomes an option. I can't really see, apart from an injury situation where Culver's playing all the time in the rotation. That gets you to probably, if everybody's healthy, it probably gets you to 12 guys, and that's it's kind of a Bud level or Taylor Jenkins kind of level of rotation that you have there, where they play a ton of guys. But I love that he showed he was ready, you know, in that Denver game. One thing you have to keep in mind is that if he were in the rotation, say he were, you know, one of the primary backup wings playing every game, you know, teams would like start treating him like Andre, you know, Robertson, you know, because Culver is not a shooter. And when he's on the court with Trent Forrest, who isn't a shooter, Culver's at a point right now where nobody's game planning for him. But if he were giving you 50 minutes every single night as part of the second unit, his lack of shooting would start to show up in the way that the other team's kind of game planning. That's not to be critical of him. You know, that's why he's not a full-fledged roster guy right now. That's why he's not a full-fledged rotation piece on some team right now. But he's a professional guy. He's a young vet, I would say. And he came to the league with a lot of just smart, you know, intelligent kind of things in his game. And then he showed that against Denver. I mean, I loved how when DeJounte was running, say, a pick and roll with Clint on the right 3-point break, and Jokic went all the way up to the level of the screen, and DeJounte swung the ball to Culver, instead of kind of like catching the ball and then letting the defense react, and then he went immediately into that space right in the middle of the paint, and he got to the rim like two or three times, and made, you know, and forced things after the free throw line one time, and to me, I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, no one else is doing that on this team. Just attacking space, it's there right away. I think the thing that's been, you know, holding the offense back so much has been letting the defense constantly get reset. You know, if the ball rotates, it's like, okay, what's going on? What do we have? As opposed to being like, okay, no, there are three guys on the other side of the court, three defenders on the other side of the court. You know, so even if we're just 2-on-2 over here, we have a lot of space to use, and we're just going to immediately attack that space. It was like, you know, shocking that Culver was the one guy who was like, when there was space to attack, he was immediately attacking it. And to your point, like, I think your question is totally fair, because when I see that, I'm like, man, the Hawks need so much more of that. They need so yes. much more of that, you know. Does that mean Culver should be in the rotation? You know, I mean, if he did that for five games, you know, I think he's starting to kind of make a case. After one game, I think it's more of the coaching staff going to DeAndre Hunter and being like, see what Culver did there, where there was a space and he immediately attacked that space. DeAndre, that's what we need from you, or whoever else we're gonna, you know, kind of talk about, you know, where right now it's like it's something to show the other players who are maybe being more deliberate in those situations, even if it's Trey or DeJounte on the backside letting the defense get reset. Look, attack the space, attack the space, attack the space. And so I, you know, that was super helpful. If he played that way all the time, he could help the team, you know. And like if Justin continued to struggle making shots, he, you know, Justin's, like I said earlier, struggles against some of the bigger matchups he has. Culver's he's a wiry, but he's a pretty strong young guy and has more, you know, a bit more kind of strength to him. And I think he's this option to where if it's him or Justin, I think depending on the matchup, you could go either way. And, you know, if Justin were able to give what he did against Denver consistently, I think it gives you an option. So I think the answer is it's an option, but not necessarily something I think that changes the way the rotation should be managed right away.
Understandable, yeah, because I know that Holiday's been out with health and safety protocols, so at least we get some depth back. But again, just like you said, not having Collins and I think Okongwu should play more four, but I mean, we know that he's been kind of groomed to be a small five in this league so far. Even though I've seen some good things, it stresses the importance of obviously Collins being gone, which I know some people have. I've seen some decent performance from Collins as of late, but just like the possession in Philadelphia, I see people saying, "Yeah, go ahead and trade Collins." I think we're going to miss Collins' presence, and I think we're going to appreciate him a little bit more, just like fans got to humble themselves and appreciate Clint Capela a little bit more when he was out, right. Which I know that you talked about, and we were both pretty vocal on Twitter about, hey, guys, let's give Clint Capela his flowers. I'm so glad he's back. He has been playing very well, and this team is truly different, but they're going to look different for the next few weeks or so with injuries.
Right.
Last question I will give you before we end this program is, with the emergence of AJ and him, it's still yet to be seen if he's going to start or not going forward. Do you think the elevated play of others is going to help Bogey slowly but surely come back?
Yeah, I mean, the question for me is Bogey's shot making going to be there? Anytime you have a lower body injury that requires surgery, and a guy who's you know getting a little further along in his career, he played a lot of minutes in Europe. Even, you know, as an NBA player, he played a good bit of time over in Europe and things like that, FIFA play and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, so I hope that the shot making is still there, you know, but I personally, my feeling is I don't want to put pressure on him to be exactly the guy he was like when they were making their run to the Eastern Conference Finals, for example. He needs some time. And that, to me, is maybe, it's hard to pick one, but maybe the biggest benefit of having AJ is that it lets him ease Bogey in. You know, And thank goodness for AJ, because if this team didn't have AJ, they would need Bogey to like get to 30 minutes a game as fast as he can, you know.
Yes.
And would probably be a little bit ill advised in their approach and things like that. So thank goodness for AJ. I think you know this. I know this isn't very popular with Hawks fans, but the starting five should be what it's been the whole season. Fans that are wanting to see JC traded, I feel like have no idea how hard it would be to replace what JC does on all the stuff he does on defense, right? Even when he's not making his three-point shot, it would be next to impossible to go find another four in the league that could do half of what he does on defense. And it, you know, and then DeAndre is kind of a similar thing. Like, I feel like people don't understand that. And I feel like people don't understand how important it is to have continuity, to try to manage the continuity there. And I think that five-man lineup, you know, they've been, you know, in and out of the top 10 in defensive rating for, you know, a little bit here now. And I feel like it's that group of five kind of establishing their defense at the beginning of the game. And then when Jalen comes off the bench, when AJ comes off the bench, now when Boogie comes off the bench, they're kind of coming in and just, you know, expected to provide continuity of what was started by that group that started the set of five that started the game. Now, do I think AJ is going to spend his career as a backup? Nope. Not at all. You know, I think he's going to be as absolute starting, like I said earlier, it wouldn't surprise me if he makes a few All-Star games in his career. But for this year, for where things are, the best version of this team, same starting five, they've started to figure some things and unlock some offense they haven't been able to find so far this year. And their defensive play is they stay right there around 9, 10, 11. You know, if they did better that in defensive rating, would that be awesome? But I feel like people who are saying trade Hunter, trade JC or whatever, aren't understanding what has gone into their defensive performance so far this year. I know the offense looks ugly sometimes. I know that Hunter looks like really clunky on offense at moments. I know JC has limitations that will drive fans crazy. And so I'm not being critical of fans that have kind of reaction to how the offense looks sometimes and how it looks like if they had a forward that could do a little bit more as a passer. Of course that would help them. No doubt that would help him. And I think AJ's already providing some of that. Bogey's going to provide some of that as he kind of ramps back up. But if this team wants to, you know, be, say, top five seed in the East like they were last year, their defense is going to have to be really, really good, at least until they can kind of figure out what's holding them back on offense. But obviously you'd want, you know, a top 12 defense the whole way and to never see that go away. You trade JC casually. You trade, you know, DeAndre, you know, when he's eligible to trade casually, you're punting a ton of defense that's helped this team get to the record they have right now. That's my view.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I'm with you there. They are some unsung heroes defensively, and the Hawks are underratedly a really good defensive team. As far as comparison to the rest of the NBA to start the season, which we've seen some improvement there. A lot of people get caught up in seeing Herter's numbers and thinking that, oh my God, we need offense. We need offense. And I'm with you. It does look bad at times. But my last slight question before I end is the change needed to be Murray running the offense more and Trey playing more off ball?
Yeah, I think that would help them if, and this is a massive if Trey can make that work. I mean, so what we saw, say, the first five games of the year or so, maybe the first eight games of the year or so, was Trey and DeJounte giving each other a lot of space, neither of them forcing the other into what they need, you know. And I thought that was a great indication that they were going to just try to empower the other. You know, and not kind of, you know, not have Trey telling DeJounte, I need you to do X, Y, and Z. That's what I need from you for me to get mine. And then just the same happening in the reverse process. And then we saw, you know, maybe the Toronto game was where Trey kind of really went back to playing on ball more. And his numbers have been much better since then. Mm-hmm. His shooting, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, we have to ask ourselves, can Trey be an efficient scorer if he's not getting the rhythm he's used to having, if he's not getting a rhythm in the ways he's used to getting rhythm by dominating the ball, you know? And so that's the thing for me. It's easy for people to say, you know, Trey has been a low volume, awesome catch and shoot, guy the last since he's been in the league. That's true. And I'd love for Trey to get to triple his catch and shoot three volume, for example. But if Trey's actual deal is I got to be on the ball to have rhythm, then that's not, in my mind, Trey kind of making up some fabricated kind of thing. And so there's in my mind, there's a delicate balance to find. And I trust these guys to find it if they all are approaching it from a constructive standpoint and from the standpoint of wanting to figure it out for the betterment of the team. But in my mind, the person who has the most adapting to do is Trey, because if Trey could kind of find a way to develop and maintain more rhythm with DeJounte being the initiator a bit more often, if not more than a bit more often, I do think that would help the team. But if Trey can't find and maintain rhythm in that way, that's going to punt a lot of offensive value that this team should have. And so it's tricky, and I say it that way not to not answer the question, but just to kind of put some messaging out there to listeners and others to say, the way that we boil it down on Twitter sometimes is not nuance, and is not considering all the different dynamics at play. Trey needs to have voice in this, and Trey needs to be able to say, this is what I feel like I need. This is what sharing that responsibility with DeJounte looks like for me. And it might be a bit of a moving target. It might be, okay, for the next quarter of the season, it's going to look like this. But we have the goal of the third quarter of the season that we're moving a little bit more towards, say, DeJounte creating and have this incremental approach. But Trey needs to have voice in that. And Trey needs to be empowered to say, this is what I need to be at my best. But also to be willing to try to adapt and accommodate some change too that's better for the team, while letting him have the voice that he deserves to have around also saying, well, this is what I need. So let's find that balance between what does Trey need and what's the best output for the team. Not a surprise that hasn't been they haven't hit on that after just a quarter of the season. But for me, it's both. Like, how do we get what's the formula for us to be our best on offense? How do we do that considering what Trey needs to be what Trey is capable of being? And it's almost the duality of that kind of problem solving. That has to be solved in a combination with each sides of that. In my mind, that's the trick. That's what I'm kind of watching to see what happens.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. That's really what does need to happen. Just them just from playing more together, and just the more they understand each other and understand how it can work as far as sharing that responsibility. I would love for an opportunity for later on in the season to see, Murray bring the ball up and there's a set ran that gets Trey involved, or just know that, hey, Murray is really good at intentionally getting the ball into the post and letting them work, and then all of a sudden creating an opportunity, passing out of the post for a catch and shoot opportunity for someone else. Maybe it is Trey working the off ball action there. Just a wrinkle in a, not like a situation like in Houston where it was Harden and Chris Paul and one person was just standoffish while the other one was running the offense. I don't want that. I truly want this is your possession. Within a flow of a game, managing, because I just feel like Murray just has such a good control over the game and game flow. And I felt like the game was in control throughout the duration of the game Friday night. I just felt like Murray always had a hand on the game and a pulse on the game. And I see Trey Young have those games, and he is dominant in those games. He'll have like 14, 15 assists, two turnovers. He'll get his 28 points, but others are doing their job offensively, and he's really did a really good job of getting them within a rhythm, within a flow. I've seen Trey do it, but then just like you mentioned, you'll see Trey It's an 8-0 run for the other team, and instead of just running the offense to get an easy shot before Nate called a timeout, you jack up a three, and then all of a sudden they get the ball quickly and go down the court, and now it's a 10-0 run, and then Nate calls a timeout. Those little possessions, those little moments there, those low percentage shots within crucial moments of games, it's where I still need to see Trey grow at, and I think that's going to come with trust, which needs to be developed and which needs to be worked out with Nate McMillan and Trey Young, as we talked about at the top of the program. So I'm with you, Glenn. There's still so much basketball. The sky's not falling just because this article came out, or, oh my God, the Hawks are 13-10. We lost some winnable games, which we have. We're not going to forget that Houston Rockets game. We're not going to forget the Charlotte Hornets game earlier in the season. You know, there's definitely some winnable games we've lost. Yeah. But there's still so much more work to be done. And DeJounte Murray talked about that in that post-game interview. And I'm looking to see him lead and maybe open up a line of communication with Nate and Trey and his team to really just pull them together through this adversity that is injury. And let's see how they weather the storm. I mean, there's some pretty winnable games, you know, this next stretch. But we said that before and lost them. So,
right.
What are you expecting these next few weeks?
It'll be interesting to see. One thought before I answer the question is that I think it's so important to recognize is that their defense is buying them time to work out the offense. Right, they're 13-10 because their defense has shown up ever since that, you know, I hate to keep bringing it back up, right, but that Pelicans game was really when they kind of decided they were going to play some defense for real.
And
that's buying them time, and once again, appreciate what JC and Hunter bring there, but like, it's not, you know, and fans might push back, and it's only fair to say that they brought that defense against the Nuggets without those guys, right? So if you look back to the Nuggets games, like, well, how did the Hawks win that game? I mean, the Nuggets went out and intentionally built a roster to give them the defense of KCP, Bruce Brown, and Aaron Gordon, three guys who can defend on ball, that the Hawks have nothing like that. Like, nothing like that, right? And the whole idea was like, okay, we're going to build the offense around, you know, Jokic, and that's obvious and stuff. And in the third quarter, they moved Aaron Gordon onto DeJounte, and DeJounte went like 1-for-5 during that stretch of time that Aaron Gordon was on the court in the third quarter. But here's the thing, you know, the Hawks played better team defense. The Hawks were more fundamental defensively as a team, and it almost didn't matter which group was on the court at the time. They defended. They were bringing help via the baseline to Jokic, and the weak side was organized. When that helper went, they were organized on the weak side. And you saw times when like, say, Gordon was kind of, you know, pushing DeJounte around, and the rest of the defensive half court wasn't well organized by Denver, and that's why the Hawks won that game. And so, even if they are going to miss JC for, say, 2 or 3 more weeks or more, we don't know, you know. And, you know, the Hawks are capable, or they're in a place where they've shown they can play that team defense. And they went out and won a game without two starters, without, you know, key guys missing. And they had a plan, and they limited what Jokic did enough because of how sound they were as a group and how connected they were. You know, specifically coming up, they have OKC on Monday, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
That'll be tricky because OKC plays 5-out offense all 48 minutes a game.
And they play hard.
They play hard, but like, what do the Hawks do with Clint? Like, I mean, OKC doesn't play. You know, they play 5-out all the time. They'll play Muscala like crazy, and just pay, you know, park him on the 3-point line and be like, okay, what are you gonna do with your guy like Capella, you know? And they play fast, and Shea is awesome. I mean, absolutely awesome. So that should be a fun game, I think. I mean, don't miss that, because Shea is just so much fun. But in a sense it's a tough matchup for the Hawks because of how they draw the opposing team's big man out. You know, they play the Bulls on Friday, I think, and I mean, DeRozan is always tough, you know, especially if they don't have Hunter for that game, which, you know, seems like that might be the case. Then that's going to be kind of tricky as well, you know. And I love the Bulls' young wings. I love, you know, Green and, you know, the rest of those guys and Domusu, and, you know, I love watching OKC. I love watching the Bulls. This is going to be a fun week for me. I'm blowing a blanket who they play on Wednesday. Right? I guess it's the Knicks. I think the Knicks on Wednesday.
Knicks Wednesday, yeah, in the Garden on ESPN.
Yeah,
and then Nets on Friday.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so the Bulls must be later on. So, but yeah, I mean,
next Sunday, yes.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So, thank you for that. So, I mean, so they're doing their kind of traditional trip to New York where they hit both of those teams kind of up there. So, I mean, the Hawks should be competitive in all these games. I know Hawks tend to say they should be OKC. If that's what you think, you probably haven't been watching OKC. OKC is tough. And if they don't, especially if they're missing Hunter and, you know, Shea is an absolute handful. So fun games. I hope the Hawks do well. I'm encouraged by what guys like Culver showed and Jalen showed in, you know, more minutes and in that Denver win. And so I think the Hawks have enough functional depth to get them through this week. I'd love to see them, you know, 2-2 would be in the world. I'd love to see them be 3-1 in these four games. But I mean, we'll, like, with this thing that happened between Nate and Trey, like, we'll see where the team's energy is. We'll see where the team's kind of how distracted they are or aren't. I think that's going to have probably be the biggest factor in how this next four games go than almost anything else is, have they settled things down, you know, or is there still kind of a massive distraction or not? So, you know, the only way to find out is to watch as the games come up. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's going to be a fun week. Like you said, and I've said too, OKC is a tough out. They're 10-13 right now and playing with a lot more confidence, and they play with a lot of energy, score a lot of points. So defense is going to have to be the focus again. Can they bring that same defensive intensity and focus and connectivity against a Oklahoma City Thunder team that will challenge them? Luckily, that game is at home. We'll have the element of home court advantage. So if you're in the area and you're going to the game, even though tickets are cheap, you won't regret it. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a borderline all-star, if not an all-star this year, playing how he is right now. And that's going to be an interesting game. And obviously, you know they're going to bring it against the Knicks. They always bring it against the Knicks, especially on ESPN in the Garden. Trey should be back tomorrow, but definitely will be back for that Knicks game, barring anything happening to him Monday night. And then obviously the Nets, we know what the Nets are defensively, what they're not. But they're playing better ball as of right now. And then welcoming the Bulls, which is a very important series this year for the Hawks. We're going to see the Bulls a couple times in the next few weeks. So I'm excited to see how they respond as far as Nate and Trey tomorrow. I think they're going to let, you know, push it to the back burner. Hey, let's go out there. We have a job to do. I think they're going to go out. The fact that he practiced today is a good sign. So, hey, they can turn the page, move forward, go out there and, you know, give your all. I mean, I think having Trey back will help against that Thunder, against the Thunder team tomorrow. And, you know, Trey loves going against his hometown team in the Thunder. He always has some pretty monstrous games. So I expect a monster game from Trey Young tomorrow night. Yeah. And let's see everybody else bring it. But, Glenn, thank you again for coming on to the program. As you see, we're making an effort to get you on the program more often. But there's always so much to talk about. And thank you again for The Athletic for doing that earlier. But, Glenn, let everybody know what you got going on and how they can, you know, stay in touch with you and engage with you on social media.
Yeah, @Willis_Glenn, Glenn with one N. You can find me there. That's where I put out most of my kind of analysis these days. Write stuff for Peachtree Hoops now and then. Always supporting my guys over at Peachtree Hoops that are writing more frequently these days. 8 Tail and 29 podcast. Kevin and I, you know, two or three times a week, most of the time, kind of getting those podcasts out. He and I will be talking about this Trey and Nate thing a little bit later tonight, which is always good. It's going to be kind of funny to see how much Kevin will feel like he can kind of talk about because of his kind of the job he has kind of in relation to the team. So that'll be a fun conversation with him. But yeah, I mean, mostly anything you want to find that I'm doing, you can find it via Twitter. @Willis_Glenn. Brad, you know, I love the idea of, like, you know, making this a monthly thing for us. Always love talking with you. Great conversation. Really enjoyable conversation. So appreciate you having me back. Enjoyed it.
No problem. It was a no-brainer for me. I'm always glad we can make the schedule work. And thank the Lord I was off today. But, guys, you know the drill. If you love what you heard from me today, give us 5 stars. Give us a good review and share it. I'll tell everybody about one of the best podcasts out there covering the Atlanta Hawks, next to obviously Glenn's program, and obviously Brad Rowland does his thing with Locked On Hawks, and my boy E-Dub doing his podcast as well. So, you know, check out all the Hawks content, but I'm biased. We'll show favoritism here. So you know the drill. Share with fellow Hawks fans and follow us on Twitter at EthosHawks on Twitter. That's at EthosHawks on Twitter. And follow myself on Twitter at BradJarrett67. That is Brad, JARRETT67. Huge game for the Hawks tomorrow in State Farm Arena against the Thunder. I cannot wait to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So we'll catch you guys after that game. And you guys have a wonderful start to your week. And go Hawks.